Welcome, bienvenue, to the Fantasy Tools Podcast. This is a show where fantasy tools discuss fantasy tools. I'm your host, Eric Rentz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michael Peterson. Our mission is to discuss fantasy baseball and the tools that we're developing that help us manage our teams. Cue that intro music.
So is it karmic that they have Ohtani and Betts on the same team, or is that?
Yes, Ohtani Betts what?
I mean, I think we can both agree that whatever the true story is, that we're done really hearing about this, right? From Ohtani's perspective,
that we're done hearing about it from Ohtani's perspective.
I think so. The MLB has no.
What do you mean?
The MLB has no incentive to punish him.
Oh.
And every incentive not to punish him.
Yes.
I mean, they have every incentive to take whatever the most favorable story is, and like...
They're like, can you... Okay. And of course, it's like the story is changing too much. And that was even exposed, like you and I were texting. And there was some confusion because when I read the initial article, I had seen the interpreter had gambling debts at a casino in which... money was wired. And to me, it was like, oh, all right. I mean, that sort of, whatever, seems somewhat plausible. And then, and you're like, well, the bookie bet making was like, well, it could be some other game. It's like, no. It's a bookie that he was paying. He's like, oh, wow, that feels like very, a lot clearer that this is sports gambling. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it would be hilarious if it was like, oh, yeah. No, Ohtani just gambled on the Oscars. Was terrible at it. Like, well.
He's really invested, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you know, figure skating.
Yeah.
Just figure skating, ski jumping, all the regular sports you would gamble on, he just gambles on.
I'm cynical enough that no matter what the truth is, this story is going away.
Yeah, I don't think it will.
Like no one has to worry from a fantasy baseball perspective. Like Ohtani owners have nothing to worry about.
I don't think. Well, unless it's distracting him. Okay. Wait. So we got some fantasy news. Ask and you shall receive.
After no fantasy news for so long.
The first story that I found was like the most obvious story that I wondered why it's taken so goddamn long. Disney will try to set up Star Wars marathons, all 9 movies, at theaters across the country on May 4th. May the 4th be with you. Duh! Like, why has this not been done? Disney needs money to make up for the pandemic.
Disney needs money.
Park losses. Like, why didn't they do this earlier?
Disney needs money. Come on. And this is all wrapped up in the idea that they're tying it to the release of The Acolyte. Right, that it's all kind of the run up to The Acolyte, which is its whole own thing that I didn't really understand until now.
That it was not in the same time period as anything that we've ever watched before.
Well, that, but I think allegedly. I just didn't fully understand what it was. Also, that there's a bizarre number, like a weird cast, like. If you told me the cast members' names and then asked, like, what show is this going to be, I never would have been like, clearly a Star Wars property.
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know any of those actors. Who are they?
Well, there's a guy from Squid Game. There's a guy from The Good Place. There's Trinity.
Trinity?
Is the star.
Oh, that was her.
Trinity. Oh, man. Trinity is the star. And apparently, although I didn't see her in the trailer, Daphne Keene, who is... Who's Lyra?
Ugh. Okay.
your favorite actor.
God, could you just have been like 10% better in that show?
Maybe it was warm up for this. That's only one half of the fantasy news, though. That's only one half. And not even. Maybe only a third of the fantasy trailers.
Two other trailers.
Do you watch both?
And we didn't even put Beetlejuice in here. We're not like scraping the bottom of the barrel being like, we actually, you know, watched Beetlejuice one time and want to see the trailer.
I don't feel that at all. No, we're not scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Greens or blacks?
Blacks. I mean, I hate it, but not a Hightower fan.
I felt like the trailer was... I felt like the Blacks trailer was worse than the Greens. Like, I felt the Greens was more compelling.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I watched the Blacks trailer, and I was like, I'm definitely rooting for this side, but they're not making it easy on me.
I know. And also, just the kind of, like, looks at Smith, it's like, where's TARDIS?
Yeah, I know.
Is it not... I don't know why, but just in a lot of the... Without the show... And you just see stills of him, and you're like, man, it's not compelling. That's not who he is.
But he's very good in the show. But he's
in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. More movement.
Yeah. Again, I'm sure we'll talk about this when we finally see these. June 16th, also, not a time of the year that I was expecting at all.
I know. You had said fall for a while. Isn't it like Father's Day?
This is their gift to dads everywhere.
Apparently, yes. That's Father's Day.
It's like, on Father's Day, it'll be back. You're welcome.
Maybe, I mean, hey, marketing. whatever the hell it is, who owns HBO? Discovery? Discovery, HBO, Time Warner?
Good for them. But I think, anyway, taking the 30,000-foot view, super excited for both of these, actually. I'm more excited for the Acolyte.
Well, Acolyte, we didn't even say... June 4th.
Good call, Acolyte, on swooping in to take some of the fantasy thunder.
Rings of Power. Did the folks for the Rings of Power just like pop champagne as soon as they found out? Like, hey, we're by ourselves in the fall.
100%. They were like,
undisclosed time window.
so good that we couldn't make June happen. Like,
yeah, there's someone assistant producers like, I told you we didn't want to do a summer release.
Yeah, that's very true. Anyway, good stuff. Real good stuff. Exciting. Going to be a fun summer. Normally the driest season, but we're going to have full-on baseball and full-on fantasy. Whew, yikes. We got to get ready.
I mean, like, but seriously, things are finally coming back to normal.
I know.
I think today we should look at ownership.
Yes,
we have
please.
Talked a lot. Yeah, we've talked a lot about rankings over the last couple of weeks, but you know what is more indicative of how people think and players' value is the actual ownership of those players.
Yeah.
I have dusted off the ownership scraper. Again, the ownership scraper takes, thank you, Fantasy Pros, takes Fantasy Pros information about ownership on a given day and then saves it so that we can have longitudinal data sets so we can look at it over time. The ownership changes over time. Now, this is fun because it can go across years.
Mm-hmm.
It can go across years, and it has been going for several different years. And I pulled out the data because we don't need 2022 data. As fun as that is to know how much owned Jackson Holliday was in 2022, not necessary. I have that information too. So what I've done, I had to do a couple things to dust the machinery off. Number one, because there's a scraper using GitHub Actions. I always want to say Google, but it's GitHub Actions. Had to dust that off because Fantasy Pros has changed from they have kind of a preseason mode, and then they have a regular season mode. And I have a switch in the system, true-false switch that I have to put on, but it was failing for a couple of days, and it's like, why is this failing? And then it's like, oh yeah, you have to go line by line, and then it's all of a sudden you're going line by line, and then all of a sudden you have a commented out is is preseason false, and it's like, I wonder if this would work if I just uncommented that piece of code.
Yeah,
it does.
Always good to leave yourself notes like that.
It's great. Yeah, it's like future. Future you will always be helpful, thankful of past you when you have made that kind of decision. So I did that. And then there's one other problem. So that works for the scraping piece of it. But then I have a couple of, I have a notebook and a Python script, kind of put this data in there. And I was having a struggle to actually like process the data. And the issue that I found was that during that postseason time period that it wasn't scraping the actual ownership data. So I had to I had to delete those files, and then boom, everything is working fine.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. It's like one of those pullback cars. You pull back the car and then you hold the tires down so it doesn't start spinning, and then you put it down and then you let go. And that was what it felt like with the script.
good metaphor.
But then, like I said, we don't really care about 2022 data, so I also archived everything to the All-Star game last year.
Okay.
So we have everything since then. So if you look at, I've given you a graph of Yonier Diaz.
Yeah.
It starts in essentially July of last year, and then it goes to right now. And the x-axis is still days.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we have, because there's deleted everything between October 2nd, everything including October 2nd, to St. Patrick's Day. So all of a sudden there's a straight line between October 1st and the day after St. Patrick's Day.
That's fine. Linear interpolation, it works.
Yeah, interpolation is straight line the shit out of that. All right, and again, I've got a couple of different scripts that take this information. It takes all the players, all their ownership changes, and then I've got a variable that just says highest climbers. Mm-hmm. So those are the players that between two dates. And with the dates that I used was the All-Star game last year. So the beginning of this epoch that we're now looking at yesterday. Who are the guys that have had the highest ownership change? Here's the list. It's a funny list. Tanner Scott, Yonier Diaz, Michael King, Nick Pivetta, Vinny Pasquantino, Walker Buehler, Evan Carter, Cole Reagans, Edwin Diaz, and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. That's a funny mix of players.
That is, it's a very funny mix of players. It's like highly touted prospects, pitchers coming back from injury, one guy coming from overseas, and then Cole Reagans. I mean, who's, well, no. Nick Pivetta. I mean, it's hard to. Is Nick Pivetta the weirdest one on here? Like, what happened there?
Nick Pivetta shouldn't be. One of these things is not like the other. Nick Pivetta. We really think that he's going to be that good? I know he had a pretty good second half last year, undefined role, and unfortunately, still Nick Pivetta.
Yeah. Can't get rid of that. Yeah, I think, I mean, looking at so you also gave me the raw numbers, which I appreciate looking at here, and going from, you have a bunch of guys that went from zero, like straight zero, not owned by anybody, to some value. So I would say there's actually two classes. There's guys that, like, they weren't even on anyone's ownership radar at all last year. And then there's, like, the guys like Pivetta and King.
Lightly who had, owned.
Yeah, Yonier Diaz, too, a little bit, who had a little bit of ownership. But like these prospects,
Yonier Diaz, Michael King, and Nick Pivetta were lightly owned.
Yeah, but then you have the guys that are prospects here, like Pasquantino, Evan Carter, Cole Reagans. Like Cole Reagans, and then guys coming back from injuries, Walker Buehler, Edwin Diaz, and Yamamoto. So I guess a couple of those guys would have been ones where if you had done the diff with 2022, this wouldn't be as stark, right? So like Edwin Diaz in 2022. Super owned. Walker Buehler 2022 would have been pretty owned also.
Right. Yeah, a couple of them.
So they're having big injury off years.
Yeah, it's funny you put Vinny Pasquantino in the prospect. Are we still thinking of him as a prospect?
I think the 0% ownership last year at the All-Star.
He got down to zero because injured. He sucked.
Didn't he? He got injured he too, sucked. Right?
Well, yes, you're right. He had a strained ear. Strained batting average, I guess.
Yeah.
You usually do that on ERA.
Yeah. I think I still think of him as a prospect because he's still riding his hype, right? He's never actually realized value in I guess I should categorize these into guys that haven't demonstrated their value in the MLB yet.
Right.
Which also I
would still split up those guys.
But that also encompasses Yamamoto, Pasquantino, Evan Carter, Cole Reagans to some level, because like, where'd this come from?
This is like a decision tree, just like random forest, like all these analyses that we could throw these into.
Actually, this would be interesting data to throw into, like, to pair with the clustering analysis. Like, here's what we think these guys are going to get for stats. Tell me how this works with the ownership. like find me the class. Find me the class of guys.
Predictive?
Yeah. Because we could use these as tags to our rates and find classes of guys that it's like surefire things, ones that we probably missed in our projections, ones where our projections find like better value. You know, there's like this would probably be a really interesting pairing with that.
Could we do that?
Yeah, for sure.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Of course, this is a little late on drafting wise, but I think it would be really helpful in terms of it's really great on drafting. But again, it reminded me of our discussion middle. We dusted this off in the middle of the winter, sort of looked at the end of the year stuff. The ownership, the curve of ownership, the histogram of ownership is really funky.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot more players in 90% owned than you kind of instinctively think.
Yep.
Because not...
CJ Abrams not that, is 91% yeah. owned. I mean, you know, that should tell you.
Right.
Just pick a random guy from the list here.
We have this in looking at NFC. It's like, that guy is 100% owned? You'll do this a couple times. Like, oh, that guy's 100% owned. You're like, what?
Yeah.
I know. He's number 8 hitter on Milwaukee, but he's still 100% owned.
Yeah, good. I mean, good for Pete Fairbanks, 90% owned in here. It's like, what? Whoa.
Yeah, you have to not be a thing. Like poor Rhys Hoskins is 63% owned. Is he going to make the 63% side look like idiots or the 37%
yeah,
side
I mean,
look like
I
idiots?
Guess you could take this as a betting thing. I assume that he's going to make the 37% side. I mean, but the thing is, like, if you take this as like a percentage that you think this guy is going to work out as a fantasy option, 63 is not bad, right? If you were like 2/3 of the time, Rhys Hoskins will be a useful fantasy player. I'd be like, okay, I buy that. Sure.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Is that really the corollary, though? I think we have to, there's like a, this is the y equals mx plus b. So we don't know what the constant is here. This is the rate, sure. But what's the constant? I mean, it's got to be like, I would say, it would be 50% ownership, right? Where do we hit the, not 50% ownership, but where do we hit 50% of the players are just owned?
Ah, in terms of quality, yeah.
Yeah, if we really want to eke out the quality of a player base compared to...
Well, in part, that's why I think starting from the top is the most interesting, because
yeah,
it's like no matter what format you're in, certain guys are going to need to be owned.
Right.
And then, you know,
well, the biggest fallers are sort of fun to look at, but also just sort of a waste of time. Wander Franco, Shane McClanahan, Felix Bautista, Sandy Alcantara, Julio Urias, Lucas Giolito, Brandon Woodruff, Bryce Elder, poor Bryce Elder,
yeah,
Tony Gonsolin, and Clayton Kershaw. It's like, well, these are all guys that we now think aren't, except for, is Bryce Elder, did he just get demoted or something like that?
Well, it's funny to think about. I mean, it's funny to look at some of these and realize that, or, you know, you look at this list and wonder which guys in here are going to be in the biggest risers next year. Like,
oh yeah,
Felix Bautista is going to do the Edwin Diaz, right?
He will do the exact Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, and I think Shane McClanahan and Sandy Alcantara, they could be, no, there's the no real
Bueller.
Parallel. The Walker Buehler, I guess, yeah. Walker Buehler is the parallel, right? Good point. The Woodruff as well. Giolito to a lesser extent. What did happen to Bryce Elder? Is he okay?
Oh, he got option to AAA.
Ah, he got option to AAA.
Darn.
Why?
That's a stacked rotation. If Chris Hill is in starting rotation. Bryce Elder's come back.
That feels like a mistake, you know, to like demote Bryce Elder.
He looks like a just happy to be here kind of guy. He's 24
he really
years
does.
Old. He's got plenty of time.
He really does.
I mean, Tony Gonsolin is on the IL, out for the season.
Well, that's good for us as people who have historically owned Tony Gonsolin and been super frustrated with him. It's good that
he's
off the table.
Tempt me, Tony. Don't tempt
me. He's off the table. Don't have to worry about it.
Brandon and Woodruff, also, he's off the table for you.
I know. Save me from myself.
Yeah. It is a little hard that there are a lot of guys on this list who are our kind of guys.
I know.
And I just to be clear, not Wander Franco. But Shane McClanahan, I've always liked. Sandy Alcantara, our model.
Yeah.
Loved. Felix Bautista, we both like. Lucas Giolito, though, I've always hated.
For the record.
He can go to hell. Brandon Woodruff, we've always liked. Bryce Elder, I've always.
Yeah.
For the last 6 months, I've had a passing interest in. Tony Gonsolin, I've always liked. Clayton Kershaw, I've always liked. Julio Urias, again, our model really liked him.
Yeah.
Just like the cop. So, I don't know, we were a little more suspect of him.
that was good. Yeah. I think, looking at going back again to the raw numbers that you put together, the bottom of the list is dominated by a lot of pitchers. We're talking about a lot of pitchers down here because you cut it off before you got to Alec Manoah, Alex Cobb, Scherzer's down here, Paxton, David Robertson. I mean, you got a lot of guys down here that I think people were trying to make work as pitchers last year. I guess I'm wondering, are any of these guys buy low, or is it really like buy really low, or have they really reached the end of the line?
I don't know. I mean, just pitchers or some of the other players as well?
Mainly I'm thinking about pitchers.
Right well, now, I think, but. I think, yeah, let's take pitchers. I think pitcher wise, I think this is a sign that people think we're out on them. And that pitchers are a little bit more binary than hitters. Like a hitter can have an injury in which they're out 60 games and then come back and then be very useful. And then ownership can change pretty fast. I mean, as we were saying about Snell, like, his whole spring is already interrupted. It's a freight train moving. This is not a sports car getting going. It's a freight train moving. So, like, if he missed all the marks in spring, he's just probably not going to be the right pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, we both agree. Like, where was Snell on this list, actually?
I have no idea.
Wow. 3% up. He went from 95% owned All-Star break last year to 98% owned now.
He must have been just the value that people were like, okay, I just got to take Snell at this point, right?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I understand the ownership because it's just like, may as well go for it.
But this list, I feel like this year we have a lot more of a transition year in starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. And especially with like Gerrit Cole also having a delayed year. All the players that we mentioned, some other guys are kind of hurt and banged up. Yeah. And then just overall, we've got the aging out of some guys like the Scherzers and the Verlanders from top tier and Kershaw. So this is, I don't know, pitching is going to be interesting. We're getting a volatile time.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a good time to erase your memory banks, right, for pitching. And just like don't be the guy in your league who's only riding aging blue chippers. You know, be ready for Bryce Elder, right? I mean, be ready for these guys that are gonna
Graham Ashcroft.
I'm thinking about like even the George Kirby's, right? And the Logan Gilberts. Those are guys that those are guys that a year ago were not really on the radar, but they're gonna be some of the aces. Well, I mean, they're all on the same team, but they're gonna be the potential aces for for future fantasy teams.
Yeah. No, transition. I love transitions. Speaking of transitions, I think that about brings us to the review session. Raisel Iglesias.
That was incredibly smooth. Did you remember that he was on the Angels for 2 years?
Yeah, of course I did.
I like fully blocked that out. All right. Last year, full season for the Atlanta Braves, he appears in 58 games. Wow. 58 games, 55 innings pitched. During that, 68 strikeouts. That's worth noting here. He's got a 2.75 ERA. And, they hid his whip from me, those jerks. A 1.19. Yikes. Ouch, whip. And 5 wins, 4 losses. It's good, but it's not great. 33 saves.
Yeah. You want to just, we want to go straight into talking about his ex-FIP and Sierra and all that wonderful
I think
stuff?
We should, because I think it's intrinsically tied. I would be curious to know what they look like over time, because what I see here was, you know, a ton of value in the 2018, 2019, 2021 range, and now it's been falling off. Is there something I'm missing?
Okay, so, well, he was not a... Was he a closer in 2018? Yes, he was. Oh, okay, he sort of started in 2016. All right. I saw him pitch. I saw him pitch in like 2015, I think. I mean, just, he's amazing. He was amazing. He was a starter. Yeah. So it was like, he had like two great innings, and then it was like, bombs away. And Great American Ballpark. So.
Yeah, yeah.
That can go south fast. All right, so his, well, just off the top of the bat, did you take a look at his FIP?
No, I didn't look at them because I'm curious.
Okay, do you think it's last year, do you think it was over or under his ERA, his FIP?
I bet his FIP is over.
It was over. It was 3.26.
Yikes. Okay.
But last year, one of the reasons that I was a fan of him in for one of the reasons that I was a fan of him was that had not, never mind, what am I talking about? Oh no, going into last year, sorry, I'm a little confused because he was on the two different teams.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I was a fan of him last year was that his, going into last year in 2022, his FIP was the same as his ERA, which is great. And then it was like, oh, and he's also going to stay on Atlanta instead of being on the crappy Angels the whole year. Well, that sounds good. That sounds like your only improvement. But he sort of didn't do much. But I think this is what we've talked about of a closers on good teams that win by a lot are not the most valuable closers. Because he can what? He's going to have to every week. There's going to be like one real high leverage save opportunity. They're going to bring him in a low leverage situation, and they're probably going to try to get him work at some point in that time, right? Yep. They want him to be what? Ultimately, closers end up usually, because that's a low innings pitch total.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I think they usually want to be more in the like 65. 70 innings for these guys, so they're always trying to find them work, so then they're being put in like laughers, and that's why I'm not really that concerned about his whip, because why? Wait, he only lost them four games. How many blown saves did he have?
I mean, I don't love him losing those, but
well, right, so I mean, this is the important piece: four losses, four blown saves. That's it. Okay. That tells you the story of like he's not in high leverage situations as much.
I guess, I mean, the other thing is like when you're on a good team, it tends to be that the rest of the bullpen is pretty good as well. So they don't, you know, they're not necessarily like, they have, I mean, I don't know that their bullpen is great, right? They have AJ Minter, I mean, who I guess has save experience.
Couldn't take the starting closer job from him. That was for certain.
Backing him up. He is 3 years younger than Iglesias. What?
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed that. Oh.
Exactly. I would not have guessed that either. They also have Joe Jimenez, who has done some saving before. They have Ken Giles in that bullpen. What?
Nice.
Also, same age as Ken Giles. My age for Rossell Iglesias is way wrong. Like, my mental age for Rossell Iglesias.
You think he's much younger?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Born in 1990.
Yeah. My mental age for Iglesias is way wrong.
Well, he has been around since 2015.
Yeah, I know. I like the minute I saw his age and thought about it, I realized that does actually make sense. He's been around for a while.
He has. I mean, 2017 was that first year as a closer, and he was pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And 2017 was already 7 years ago. This is a lifetime for closers.
I know, but I mean, look. But I guess the thing that I don't like is how low his. I guess, I mean, it's correlated with his innings pitch, but how low his strikeout total was, is what I was going to say. Is that like the 2017, he had 92 strikeouts, then 80 strikeouts, 89 strikeouts, 103 strikeouts in 2021, 68 strikeouts last.
You know, just to temper what you're saying, I think.
Okay.
I think he's still a top tier closer. I think that he's not going to be. I doubt that he's going to, like, end the season out of a job or out of the top 15 closers for production.
All right, over under 30 saves.
30.5. Over. 30.5. What?
Why
are we? What?
Well, I don't. I don't like the round number. No, I'm not going to give you 20. Look, you should say this is a slam dunk. He's gotten every year he's been a closer, a full time closer, save 2017 when he wasn't 100% full time closer. He's gotten over 30. Should be easy.
Well, he didn't in 2012, 2022. He didn't get there.
But he wasn't a closer when he got traded to Atlanta. He didn't close for them.
I see what you're saying. I mean, fine. Over 30 saves, Jason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over 30 saves. If he gets 30, I'm going to be pissed.
Good. That's fine.
Collusion.
I feel good about this. You colluded
with yourself. Well, I guess to turn it back on you, is he going to end the year outside of the top 15 closers?
I mean, top 15 is broad. That is a big...
All right, top 12. We are a 12-team. We got into this because we're in a 12-team mixed league. Will he be outside of the top 12?
No. No, he's going to... You drafted him in the top 6, right? So you're giving him a lot of leeway here.
Yeah. You draft him in the top 6 because you know that his low point is 12.
Sure. Sure. No, I...
That's part of the reason. It's the same reason that you draft Gerrit Cole each year, number one, instead of Spencer Strider, is that you're like, okay, well, I have got it. Yeah. Though, of course, Gerrit Cole is hurt this year, so... Yeah, well, so I'm just trying to contextualize that we're still like don't beat up on yourself. You got him because you're low risk, you're conservative, and you probably reached for him. That's too bad. Who are we doing next week?
We're gonna talk about Alexis Diaz.
Time for a little housekeeping. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter, Fantasy Tools, Mind the Z. Thank you, Mild Manner, for letting us use your tunes. Be sure to follow them on SoundCloud and Facebook. Feel free to email us with questions or comments. Send us messages at fantasy.tools@gmail.com. Again, mind the Z. All I've got left is, we're select to you, buddy.
We're select to you, too.